From the National Newsroom of the Canadian Press, I'm Lori Paris. The cause of a fatal early morning house fire in Yarmouth, Nova Scotia is under investigation with the involvement of the RCMP's Major Crime Unit, the Nova Scotia Office of the Fire Marshal, and the province's Medical Examiner. Dozens of firefighters from several departments in the area were called to the home in Pubnico Head shortly after midnight, where the building was fully engulfed in flames. The Red Cross says four children lived in the now-destroyed home with their father and his common-law wife, but the RCMP is only saying there were multiple fatalities without confirming how many or the ages of the deceased. The case of a father accused of killing his two young daughters in the Victoria area has prompted scrutiny of a judge's decision to allow him significant parenting time. Peter Jaffe of the University of Western Ontario says there should be more specialization among judges, with some focusing exclusively on domestic violence.
I think judges have difficult jobs, and they're trying to balance multiple interests. They're trying to balance the children's, you know, rights and needs to have a relationship with both parents, and they're trying to balance that with children's safety.
Andrew Barry has been charged with two counts of second-degree murder. New York's Kennedy Airport is now just beginning to recover from major delays that stranded thousands of passengers after Thursday's fierce winter storm.
The Port Authority, which runs Kennedy, says Saturday saw 94 flight cancellations on top of Friday's cancellations and Thursday's closure. Pictures on social media showed some terminal floors covered with travelers camped out, waiting for flights or luggage. Others posted about sitting on the tarmac for hours waiting to deplane. Senator Charles Schumer says JFK needs to be better prepared for the weather.
What happened at JFK was way beyond cutting a little slack. It seemed almost everything broke down. It seemed like a disaster.
The Port Authority says frigid temperatures continue to cause equipment failures and slower than normal operations. Julie Walker, New York.
There are a number of Canadians up for statues at tonight's Golden Globe Awards. The Handmaid's Tale, based on Canadian author Margaret Atwood's novel, has several nominations, while HBO miniseries Big Little Lies, directed by Montreal's Jean-Marc Vallée, is up for six trophies. Canadian actors Eric McCormack and Christopher Plummer are also contenders, McCormack for Will and Grace, and Plummer for All the Money in the World. And in Italy, a famous opera is changing its ending to fight violence against women.
Here at the Florence Opera House, a new Carmen opens Sunday night that ends not with the protagonist being murdered by the jealous ex-lover Don Jose, but with Carmen killing him in self-defense. Italian director Leo Muscato says 140 years after Georges Bizet wrote the opera, it makes little sense to stick to a narrative in which a woman has to pay with her life for making a free choice. The move is an effort to draw attention to widespread violence against women in Italy. Megan Williams, ABC News, Florence.
This is the Canadian Press. In sports, the Hamilton Tiger Cats are buying themselves more time to negotiate with former NFL quarterback Johnny Manziel. The CFL team issued a statement today confirming an offer was made to the 2012 Heisman Trophy winner. By doing so, the Tiger Cats maintain his rights and prevent him from becoming a free agent. The Jacksonville Jaguars are moving on to the next round of the NFL playoffs. They posted a 10-3 win over the Buffalo Bills this afternoon. The Jaguars will next travel to Pittsburgh to play the Steelers. It's a busy day in the National Hockey League with 10 games on the schedule. Canadian teams are in action. Winnipeg entertains San Jose, Edmonton is at Chicago, and Montreal is home to Vancouver. John Morris and Caitlin Laws will represent Canada in mixed doubles curling at the 2018 Winter Olympics. They defeated Brad Gushue and Val Sweden 8-6 in the final of the national trials today. From the Canadian Press, I'm Lori Paris.
Here's your weather report on 101.5 The Hawk. Currently outside, it's minus 8 degrees Celsius with snow and wind blowing. Barometric pressure is at 102.1 kilopascals and falling. Humidity's at 69% with the wind coming from the south-southwest at 35 kilometers per hour with gusts of up to 46 kilometers per hour. Wind chill is making it feel like minus 18, although that seems downright balmy considering the temperatures that we've had lately. Tonight, it's going to go down to minus 6 with periods of snow. Monday, more snow in the morning with a high of 0 and a low of minus 6. Tuesday, a mix of sun and cloud with a high of minus 4 and a low of minus 9 and more snow in the forecast. Wednesday, temperatures actually go up above the freezing mark to 3. And there's a chance of flurries or rain showers and more showers in the evening. Thursday, again, it goes up to 6, more showers in the forecast. Friday, you get a mix of sun and cloud with a high of 1 and a low of minus 10. Can't wait to see what all those showers will bring us with that low of minus 10. So it's fun times all around here in southern Ontario. Tonight, cloudy, periods of snow beginning earlier this evening. Local blowing snow this evening, amount 2 to 4 centimeters, wind southwest 40 kilometers per hour, gusting to 60, diminishing to 20, gusting to 40 late this evening. Temperature rising to minus 3 by morning. Monday, periods of snow ending in the afternoon, then cloudy with a 30% chance of flurries, amount 2 centimeters, wind southwest 20 kilometers per hour, gusting to 40, increasing to 40, gusting to 60 in the morning with a high of 0. Monday night, cloudy with a 30% chance of flurries, wind southwest 30 kilometers per hour, gusting to 50 with a low of minus 6. So since tomorrow is the day all the kiddies go back to school, please be patient on the roads. It's going to be lots of snow coming down, and you're probably going to have to get up early to get the snow off your cars and off your sidewalks before you head off to school and to work. That's your weather forecast here on 101.5 The Hawk.
From Hamilton, this is CIOI-FM, 101.5, The Hawk.
Midnight, not a sound from the pavement, has the moon lost her memory?
You're listening to Center Stage, a celebration of musicals from both the stage and screen. I'm your host, Lila Miklosh. And on the phone with me right now is Ann Bokma, award-winning writer and the host and organizer of the 6-Minute Memoir. Hello, Ann.
Hi, Lila.
How are you doing?
I'm great.
So talk to us about the 6-Minute Memoir. You have one coming up on January the 11th at the Staircase Theatre.
That's right. The 6-Minute Memoir, Lila, has been going on for about 6 years in the city, and it's a bi-monthly event at the Staircase Theatre and an annual event at the Unitarian Church on Dundurn. And what we do is we get about 10 to 12 storytellers who share stories, personal memoir-style stories, on a particular theme, and they have to tell their story all within 6 minutes. So it makes for quite a captivating evening, and people share, you know, really personal, fascinating stuff about their lives.
And what's the theme for the one happening on January the 11th?
The theme is Lies My Parents Told Me. and so I think we're going to be in for some doozies on Thursday night, and you are going to be one of the storytellers, Lila. Thanks so much for being part of it. I'm looking forward to your tale.
My pleasure. I hope it's entertaining for all.
I'm sure it will be.
And also one of my guests I have here in studio, Catherine Silverglen, will also be one of the many people sharing their 6-Minute Memoirs.
That's right. And, you know, I have folks participate who are writers, you know, who are in the performance arts, but also just lots of average folk who might be compelled. You know, I usually announce a theme on Facebook, and they might say, hey, I've got a great story, or this happened to me when I was young. So, you know, nobody needs to be a professional. I try to get a variety of voices on the stage, and I'm always amazed at the things people are willing to share on stage, and it does make for quite a beautiful evening, really, of profound sort of storytelling that I think really, you know, connects the people in the room.
And what inspired the 6-Minute Memoir event that has now become kind of an institution in Hamilton now?
Well, you know, and there's a 6-Minute Memoir. There's also Steel City Stories, Hamilton 7, all of which take place at the Staircase. You know, this city seems to love stories. And I think storytelling is kind of an old-fashioned idea, you know, this idea of sitting around the fire and telling stories, especially in this social media age. It's a way to feel connected, I think, with people, even if you don't know them, you know, the other folks in the room, and also a way to find greater meaning. You know, we learn from other people's stories. We often relate to stories that have very little to do with our own lives, but there is that sort of profound human connection. Also, you know, it's uplifting and insightful. A lot of things happen when people are willing to bear all on the stage.
And also this particular performance happening on the 11th of January at the Staircase, you're accepting donations for a particular cause. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure, yeah. The 6-Minute Memoir is always free to attend, so anyone can come. There is no cover charge. And at each event, we do a voluntary donation for a local charity. And this year, this whole year, the voluntary donations will be going to the Anglican Diocese of Niagara's Refugee Sponsorship Committee. They are trying to bring together some Syrian families in the city and need funding to do that. So that's a great cause. We've also supported Sasha in the past, the Eva Rothwell Center, the Welcome Inn, the Unitarian Church. So, you know, you can come on out. You don't have to spend any money. If you can put a toonie or a fiver in the collection, that's terrific. Food and drink is also available at the staircase. It's a great way to, you know, meet up with friends and have a pretty economical evening out. And really, you know, get to share in some great creativity.
And do you know the address at the staircase?
Yes, the staircase is at 27 Dundurn Street North. And if I could just say quickly, Lila, we do have another one there on March the 8th. The theme is The Great Escape. And then there's a big annual one at the Unitarian Church, which last year over 250 people came to that. And the theme for that one is inheritances. And we have some well-known names. We've got Tom Wilson, the singer, Jude Johnson, the singer, author Miranda Hill, Dana Robbins, a former editor of The Spec. So, you know, we've got some well-known people coming to that one. But each one is really unique in and of itself, and I encourage people to come. The staircase does get pretty crowded, so it was standing room only last time, so get there early if you want a seat.
Well, thank you very much for sharing with us here on Center Stage what's happening January the 11th at the Staircase Cafe Theater. I'm really thrilled to be a part of this, and yes, I have lots of fodder on the subject of lies my parents told me.
It's all material, right, Lila?
It's trying to keep it to 6 minutes. That's the challenge.
And there is a bell that I ring at the 6-minute mark. So, and the event starts at 7:30.
All right. Well, looking forward to it. And of course, Center Stage listeners, come check it out. Staircase on the 11th.
Thanks so much, Lila.
Thank you, Ann.
Okay.
That's Ann Bokma. She is the host and organizer of the 6-Minute Memoir happening on January the 11th at the Staircase Cafe Theater at 7:30. And you can come and hear moi, among with many other fabulous folks, share their stories on the theme Lies My Parents Told Me. We're going to have more great guests on the show in just a bit. You are listening to 101.5 The Hawk.
101.5 The Hawk.
It says here... the average unmarried female, basically insecure, due to some long frustration, may react with psychosomatic symptoms difficult to endure, affecting the upper respiratory tract. In other words, just from waiting around for that plain little band of gold, a person can develop a cold. You can spray her wherever you figure the streptococci work. You can give her a shot for whatever she's got, but it just won't work. If she's tired of getting the fisheye from the hotel clerk, a person can develop a cold. It says here, the female remaining single, just in the legal sense, shows a neurotic tendency. See note. See note.
You're listening to Center Stage, a celebration of musicals from both the stage and screen. I'm your host, Lila Miklosh, and we're going to have a discussion for the rest of this show, talking about the reality of being a woman working in theater in Canada today. And this discussion is inspired by the lawsuits that were launched by Patricia Fagan, Kristen Booth, Diana Bentley, and Hannah Miller against the Soul Pepper Theater Company and its former artistic director, Albert Schultz. We'll talk about that, but we're also going to be talking about our personal experiences with an amazing roundtable of women theater artists. So I'd like to introduce each one of them to you. First off, we have Kelly Wolf. She's a local theater maker, set and costume designer, and artist educator. Hello, Kelly.
Hello, Lila. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Then we have Catherine Silverglen. She's a Hamilton-based award-winning singer, educator, actor, writer, and star of the one-woman show Busted, about her cancer conqueror journey. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Lila.
And then joining us on the phone is Sharon Matthews, an award-winning producer, writer, actress, and cabaret performer based in Canada. Hello, Sharon.
Hey, Lila.
Great to have all of you to be a part of this conversation. One of the things that Kelly and I were talking about, because you're not an onstage person, you're a backstage person. We were talking about the gendering of certain kinds of theater work. Did you want to share that with our listeners?
Sure, I can do that. I'm a set and costume designer, and so definitely early on in my career, a lot of the costume designers are women and set designers are men, and that's how it was for a long time, and it's definitely changed. There's a lot more of, men, women, either, in all the different kinds of design. But what we found in the Associated Designers of Canada is that typically set designers were paid more and costume designers were paid a little bit less. And there didn't seem to be any kind of rationale for that, except that costume typically was the realm of women and gay men, and that was a section of society that maybe didn't have as loud a voice. And I think they recognize that and have been really working to make sure that the fees that people get are balanced, and so that you can't compare the work based on gender. It's based on work is done. Yeah.
And Catherine, I didn't mention this earlier, but you were also a co-founder and co-artistic director of a feminist theater arts collective.
Yes, I was, with the Company of Sirens, and then later I was on the board of Nightwood Theater as well in Toronto.
So any thoughts or reaction to the news coming out of Toronto regarding Soul Pepper?
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. Albert was part of a group of theater artists in Toronto that was, we thought of ourselves all of as a community of folks who were really trying to push the envelope in theater and find ways to connect that went beyond sort of the epic stories. I think when I was with the Sirens and later with Nightwood, we were working to create a popular theater, a feminist theater, telling stories by, for, about women. And there were others, allies in the community, that were, working at similar kinds of ideas with working class folk and people from Video Cabaret, people from Nightwood, people from many others of the theater companies in Toronto. We felt like a part of a larger change community. And Albert was certainly a little bit younger and came along a little bit later than my work, although we're similar in age. But his founding work and the foundational work that has been created at Soul Pepper over these last many years is phenomenal. And it is so saddening and disturbing to find that it was done in this environment and in this kind of toxic way for so many women.
Sharon, I know you've been sharing your thoughts on social media about some of what's happened. Would you like to share with our listeners how this has impacted you and how you've been taking this news in?
It's been very a strange experience. I don't know what I thought was going to happen, but I feel that, it is a huge tragedy, and I remember the day I sat on a set of a John Woo movie with Albert, and he talked about how he was going to start Soul Pepper, that he had to raise all this money to, he was starting to do, I think it was Our Town, ironically, at the Alex, and he was going to raise money and build it, and he was doubt-free that it was going to happen, and I just found that so inspiring, and I've been inspired by him for many years. His Soul Pepper has given me thousands of dollars to develop cabarets, thousands of dollars. And he's been so supportive. And of course, I back these women. I back the company. I believe the women. It just feels like such a tragedy, and it feels like it has impacted us in a way that's like a meteor crater. It's a bomb. Like, people are freaking out on social media and saying, I wish more people would speak up. And it's like, well, everyone speaks up in their own time. Mm-hmm. And I wish that they'd cancel Amadeus. And I was like, okay, but we're not a part of what's going on right now in Soulpepper, which is so hard for all the artists who are actually still working there and trying to make art and trying to come up with a way. Well, they did. They came up with a way, and they decided to cancel Amadeus themselves. Yeah. But it was very funny. It just felt like not everybody. There was a million people who were incredibly supportive, but there was just a strange ripple where people were, like, jumping out and taking it a bit on as their own cause. It's very strange. It's a very strange experience. That's the best way I can categorize it.
And just to give our listeners just a bit more context, the four women who came forward, they accused Schultz of sexual battery and harassment of a sexual nature over a 13-year period, and the theater company of being willfully blind to the fact Albert was a sexual predator and creating a poisonous work environment by not acting to curb the alleged behavior. So one of the things I've been noticing on social media especially is a lot of theater artists talking about what the reality is when you are working in theater. And my comment seems to be, we create this mystique of this family and we all have each other's back. But is that actually the reality, Kelly? Is that your reality working in theater?
I mean, I think, you know what, I've just come off a really fantastic experience working at the Grand Theater on a show where, honestly, it did feel that, which is not, we all commented on what a fantastic experience this was, but it's not always like this. You know, there's, you know, with such a large cast, there's inevitably going to be, you know, different kind of cliques or groups of people are talking, and so, you know, it's like that T-shirt, right? It's not show friends, it's show business, right? And
yes.
So we're not. Yes. It still is business, and so if it comes down to it, then everybody's going to be looking out for themselves. So, I use that as a kind of thing, like, you know, I'm not going to take anything personally, but it's just the way it is, right? But anyways, although I have to emphasize, yeah, that last one was really great. So
good.
It can happen.
It can. So, Catherine, we were talking earlier, this is work. So the expectation should be professional ones.
Indeed. I think what's challenging is that for so many years, as theater artists, many of us felt ourselves to be outside of a kind of average, if you will, environment, and I think too, as theater artists, we consider ourselves leading edge and perhaps rebellious, and we want to find new ways of communicating, telling our stories, being with each other, etc. And I think those lines become very, very difficult to draw, particularly when the company is becoming quite as successful as Soulpepper. When I first started in professional theater, my first job was at one of the summer stock companies, and the director there was known also as a sexual predator and serial abuser, unbeknownst to me as when I auditioned. And I came to understand that would be my life in theater if, in fact, I continued along that particular path. When I worked with the company of Sirens, we all chose to be there as women, in part to be safe, to get away from the casting couch, this sort of phenomena of feeling like we were going to be groomed, as Kristen spoke, and that we were going to be in a position where we would always be publicly sexualized and privately apologized to and or made to feel, you know, made to feel humbled or in some way grateful that that we had the work. So getting away from that was really important to me, but it also really shaped my career, if you will, because I became very marginalized in my work. And even Knightwood now is a very different organization, but when we were beginning Knightwood's work, we couldn't even get grants because people wouldn't consider our work theater.
Mm.
Discussing rape in a theater play, we were attacked and criticized for talking about rape on stage because that was politics, not theater.
Huh. Sharon, it sounds like a lot of what Catherine's saying is resonating with you.
It's just so funny. I feel like, in a way, when I started the theater, I had a choice of playing five different characters: a hooker, a best friend, the crazy lady next door, Ado Annie. Like, I had five different characters that I could play. And
I played Ado Annie, too. I'm just a girl who can't say no.
And they wrote a song about that.
Yes, indeed.
I think I had the great blessing and sometimes the great challenge of working at places like Live End, mm-hmm. and working with people like Hal Prince, and then working at Theater Aquarius with Max Reimer. I feel like I got to work around, but I really realized early on that that was, things happen, and that's just the way it was. And it wasn't even that we talked about it in a way that was like, oh, did you hear what happened? Like, it would be joked about, or it would be, oh, yeah, don't go into that dressing room by yourself. Or make sure you're not alone in a room with that person by yourself. Totally, like, I feel like my work was, in those five characters, so marginalized that I started to do my own stuff.
That's exactly where I went.
I know, I started doing my own work. Mm-hmm.
I even had a moment of that child-minding for a show filled with kids where one of the female actresses pulled me aside to say, yeah, so-and-so who's involved in this, we're a little worried about him. We're seeing inappropriate stuff. Can you please keep an extra eye on the kids and make sure he's staying away from them? And
God.
I was, you know, pretty young myself, and I went, oh, my, okay, we've just put this responsibility on me where I'm like, I thought this was a safe space, but apparently it's not. And mm-hmm. now I'm not only just minding the kids to make sure, you know, they don't break things or don't miss their cues. I'm keeping eyes out for predators.
When I was doing New Faces back when I was 16 years old, do you guys remember there was a thing called New Faces?
I do.
And I was, when I started that, I was 16 years old. They hired a bunch of, they hired a couple equity actors to work with us as well, and they had the big dressing rooms up front, the star dressing rooms, and there was an equity actor who used to invite all the young boys into his room, and after the first week all the young boys knew to not go.
Mm. Oh, heavens.
And again, that's, we never talked about, we were just like, oh, that's the way it is.
I think also there's something, I'm kind of talking as a slight outsider to this because I'm not a performer, I'm not on stage, mm-hmm. and I think there's a real vulnerability in just being a performer, just putting yourself out on stage,
yeah.
so that you're already in a vulnerable position, whether it's because, you know, what the topic that you're presenting or your experience level, you have that already built in. And so if there are people who know that there is a little chink in there, that it seems so easy to be able to find those people, and particularly as performers, because you're putting yourself out there. Your whole self mm-hmm. is raw and open to everybody in the audience. And so, you know, somebody's going to kind of, you know, take advantage of that.
I think the thing that really resonated with me when I watched that press conference that I found so disturbing, I had to stop it a number of times to watch, was that they've been talking about in that press conference, and they talked about in the articles that have been coming out, that it felt like, and I know we mentioned it a bit earlier, but it felt like we were groomed. As soon as you went in the theater, it wasn't just one person grooming you like a person grooms or hunts for a predator hunts. It's like a whole theatrical presence grooms you to say, this is what happened.
This is our culture.
This is the way it is. Mm-hmm. And okay. And again, I I didn't even question it. I didn't even question it.
And I know, like, with costume design, too, like, whether a director is asking for something that is, you know, I want to make sure that the performers feel comfortable and that they feel safe, right? Like, that's part of my job, too, because I know that if you're not comfortable, you're not going to give your best performance. And so, I haven't really... Only recently, you know, coming across an example where it's like, oh, we want to make, we basically sexualizing this young girl to, you know, a point where it's just because it's in the script. And you just are like, I feel really uncomfortable about this.
Yeah.
Do I feel, am I a prude? Am I like the old lady in the room now because I don't want to sexualize this girl? I felt really uncomfortable having, you know, to follow through with that.
Yeah.
That's terribly concerning. And I find, too, one of the things that struck me as I was reading some of the transcript was the ways in which Albert in particular, but I recall in my own work, the ways in which male directors would use the public space and the rehearsal period to also make that sort of culture of inappropriate behavior and that culture of almost, well, in fact, violence, normal. There, I recall so many directors in various plays just reaching and touching and groping and being so completely inappropriate in the ways that Albert was described when Stuart and Patricia Fagan were working on a particular play, and he felt that, you know, Stuart wasn't manly enough, so he went up and showed everyone how manly he was. But What strikes me as really, really upsetting is that it continued in spite of the fact that Albert was around a company that spoke against these issues. What's disturbing is that this was Soulpepper.
Yeah.
You know, if we'd heard it from other places, I don't know that I would have been quite so transfixed or traumatized in a manner. When we set out to do almost alternative theater or something that tries to push the envelope and goes beyond, you know, the comfort zones of the blue hair crowd and the kinds of things that we see frequently at summer stock and such, one hopes that the group of people working on that also have the same integrity that the work is trying to present. So I think that becomes very challenging, too, to imagine that even when you're with a company like that, that safe space isn't available. And I think there were bigger issues, too, in as much as Leslie and Albert were partnered and married, and that becomes, for want of a better word, incestuous, but entirely inappropriate that one can't speak about those issues. That simply wouldn't be allowed in a workplace. The conflict of interest in those two people sharing that space. I remember Kate Lushington and Richard Greenblatt, also co-directed and co-artistic directors on a company years and years ago. And, you know, at some point they just went, right, this isn't working. Because it can't. The roles, those roles have to be delineated, and people need to feel that there are spaces to which they can go to speak about any challenges in the workplace.
Yeah.
And Sharon, I'm going to give you a final thought to share before I move on to our next caller that's calling into the show.
Oh, I thought you were going to prompt me to make a final thought, but I'm going to have to come up with my own, which is only slightly terrifying. I think the most important thing, I ended up being on a lot of round tables just recently for ACTRA. And before this happened, and when they asked me at the same time what my takeaway, if I could take anything away from the meeting, there was one thing that I wished I could walk away with. And I said the most important thing that I think has to happen now is that the younger people who are coming into the business, they're just the way it is, needs to be that they are able to speak up in rehearsal, that they are able to speak up at whatever point in development or production when they feel uncomfortable, and it will be absolutely 100% supported.
Well, thank you, Sharon. I really appreciate you being part of this conversation.
Thanks, Lila. Take care.
You as well. Okay. We're going to have more women theater artists calling in just a bit. You are listening to 101.5 The Hawk. I'm your host, Lila Miklosh, and this is Center Stage, a celebration of musicals from both the stage and screen.
This is 101.5 The Hawk.
Listening to Center Stage, a celebration of musicals from both the stage and screen. I'm your host, Lila Miklosh, and this evening we're having a very special panel discussion about being women working in Canadian theatre right now. And in studio with me are Kelly Wolfe and Catherine Silverglenn, who have already been a part of the conversation. And thank you to Sharon Matthews for calling in earlier. On the phone with me right now is Anna Chatterton, a Governor General Award-winning, award-nominated playwright, librettist, and performer living in Hamilton, and also the winner last year of the Hamilton Arts Awards for Theatre Arts. Hello, Anna.
Hello.
We, of course, are having this conversation coming out of the lawsuit launched by four women against the Soul Pepper Theatre Company and its former artistic director, Albert Schultz, and the culture of sexual predator, violence, and a poison work environment. And we've been talking about all those different nuances as women who are a part of the theater community and the things that we've experienced. And I'm just wondering what your reality has been as a theater artist.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. I mean, it's interesting to think about the grooming, like, I mean, and first experiences. When I was in theater school, I went to Concordia. I was in the theater performance program. And you had to audition to be in the plays each year, as you do when you're in theater school. And so we were, I was part of a Greek play, like a new revised Greek play by a Quebecois director and writer, and I was part of the chorus. And we were all young women who were part of the chorus. There were no men, and like sort of inexplicably, and there was this weird sense of competition because there was a big group of us who were this chorus. Like, I can't remember, but maybe it was like 13 or something. And what I can remember is this sort of like, this feeling of, oh, I need to be in the front. Keep trying to think about why were we feeling that way? What was it about what the director was giving us? And I think he wanted us to be that way somehow. He wanted that energy. And of course, this is a while ago for me to remember, but what I do remember is our costumes, which were very sexy little silky slips. Again, totally no reason for us to be dressed like that. Had no context in the play for us to be sexy or whatever, you know. And I feel like, you know, dressed like that, totally vulnerable, bare legs, bare feet. Again, we weren't dancing or anything. We were mainly standing and speaking together. And each of us, I think the competition came out of different lines. Who got the most lines? You know, just sort of terrible, you know, way to experience, you know, when you're in a theater school and you have a class of 11 or something, you know. each of you, and you're supposed to be learning to bond. And, you know, anyways, I always think back on that experience. And this was a teacher that we had that would teach us sometimes. And I always remember so I had this experience with him in this Greek play. And then at the end of the year, we might have even, it was probably in third year or last year, at one point he sort of, you know, I have no idea what came before, but suddenly he just spazzed out and was like, not one of you is good looking enough to be in a soap opera. I know. And we all had like these different reactions to it. I laughed because I never wanted to be in a soap opera. Someone cried. And then one woman said, even me. And he said, yeah, but you're not thin enough. You know, and it's like, this was our like launch into what was going to be our professional careers, you know? And then my other experience that I think of, again, these are all, it's interesting that they come when I'm younger. And again, like I think it was a Catherine who was saying that, you know, I work with Nightwing Theater quite often. So, and I think, and I have a feminist theater company, my own little theater company, you know, so. I think I have looked for ways to work differently. But so again, it's since then, but when I was around 22, like fresh out of theater school, and I took a class with a theater artist who I debated naming, but my husband thought I shouldn't name him.
Sitting here trying not to name names.
Trying not to name names. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe in another context someday I will. But anyhow, so I took a class with somebody who has his own company and does a lot of plays and is always the director of these plays. And so I was very young and, of course, admired this company. And he would give, he gave me attention and flattery that at that young age I didn't know what to do with. And I feel like what's complicated about it is I feel that I was oddly flattered. You know, that I was being given this attention. He would call me. He would ask to meet me for coffee. And nothing overt happened. He never reached out and touched me. He never said anything, let's say, sexual. But he complimented me a lot. He would email me compliments, say, you looked very beautiful tonight. You know, if we saw each other at an opening or something. He asked me to go for a picnic. So I went. You know, and I was all like, I think, like, you know, I was so young. And I think I was like, oh, what does this mean? Like, what's happening? Is he going to ask me to be in his play? Which, you know, didn't happen. And then, sure enough, I start to hear stories about this person. And I meet a woman maybe like 5 or 6 years later who mentioned something about it. And I said, oh, that happened to you too. And suddenly we realized we had the exact same experience, like to the point that he had also asked her the same park for the same picnic and said the same compliments.
Script, for goodness sake.
Yeah, the same script.
Insert name here.
Exactly, insert name here. And then since then I've heard awful stories from women who were in his plays, instances of one woman who needed to be naked at a certain point in the play. Whether or not that was necessary, I don't know, but she was upstage, you know, to the back of the stage, and all the other actors were in the front of the stage. But this director, who's also an actor in the plays quite often, which was not part of the blocking, would turn himself around to look, so he could look. He would also go into the wings when she had to undress, even though he wasn't supposed to be in those wings.
Oh,
yeah. And so I heard that in this particular instance, another woman stood up for the women in the group and said, this was not the blocking. You were not supposed to turn around. You shouldn't get out of the wings when she's getting changed. There's no reason for you to be on that side of the wings. And apparently he totally lost his temper and threw a chair and said, what are you accusing me of? And, you know, and yet this individual continues on and people continue to want to be in his plays because they have a great reputation and people need to get work, you know, and these stories are murmuring. So anyways, that's where I'm coming from. That's, you know, but I think what I find very upsetting, and I don't recall if it was not the story that I just told you, but it might have been the same individual or if it was a different individual, but a friend of mine posted on Facebook that she, you know, had, you know, untoward things happen to her, comments made when she was on a production, her and three other women in the play, in the cast, and she reached out to the Canadian Actors Equity Association, which is the union that all actors are part of, or most professional actors are part of, and she was told there was nothing they could do.
Oof.
And I just feel so upset about that. Like, you know, I mean, of course, this was a while ago. I'm not saying it was yesterday. But the fact that she was then stuck, she called.
It sounds like Gian Gomeshi and the reaction to the union at CBC when unionized employees came to complain.
Exactly.
They were like, well, you can't stop the golden goose. You can't do anything there. Yep.
Yeah, and I think I recall that she said that this person was an older actor and had a very good reputation and huge resume, but
going to employ some of the members of the equity board,
yes,
et cetera. That's some of what's become so challenging is often the people representing us are sometimes some of the predators and or their best friends and or married to them.
Yeah.
So there's nowhere that one can go to air some of these complaints or to talk about resolution, because we're such an insular community in some ways. And that was one of the big things that the four women talked about, and their lawyer in particular, saying, you know, he had such a far reach. If you complained, if you were known as someone who said anything bad about, you know, the Grand Albert, it would just get out there. And certainly for me, in my younger years, I felt very similar, that there were folks in the industry that I needed to stay away from. But if I were ever to say anything untoward, I certainly wouldn't work with them again and wouldn't be called for auditions, et cetera, et cetera. So
it's terrifying.
It is terrifying, yeah.
Anna, thank you for sharing your stories and observations with us. I have yet one more guest to have on the air. It's a robust conversation, to be sure, and I'm sure we could probably have an 8-part series of women sitting around talking about our horror stories. So I definitely appreciate you adding your voice to this discussion.
I'm glad that you're having it. Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome.
Take care.
That's Anna Chatterton, a Governor General Award nominated playwright and Hamiltonian, speaking to us about her experiences. We're going to have one more caller come and join our conversation. You are listening to 101.5 The Hawk. I'm your host, Lila Miklos, and this is Center Stage, a celebration of musicals from both the stage and screen.
From Hamilton, this is 101.5 FM, The Hawk.
Propose a toast. Here's to the ladies who lunch. Everybody laugh. Lounging in their caftans and planning a brunch on their own. Off to the gym, then to a fitting, claiming their fat. And looking grim, 'cause they've been sitting, choosing a hat. Does anyone still wear a hat? Drink to that. Here's to the girls who stay smart. Aren't they aghast? Rushing to their classes in optical art, wishing it would pass.
You're listening to Center Stage, a celebration of musicals from both the stage and screen. I'm your host, Lila Miklos. We've been having a very thought-provoking and deep discussion with women theater artists around our community. Kelly Wolf and Catherine Silver-Glenn have been here in the studio with me. We had Sharon Matthews on the phone earlier, and then Anna Chatterton. And now on the phone with us is Stephanie Hope Lawler, an actor, teaching artist, and artistic director of Hamilton-based independent theater company Rooks Theater, who I also saw in a fabulous production of Venus in Fur. Hello, Stephanie. Thank you for joining the conversation.
Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. You've been listening as we've been talking, and I just want to give you a chance to share your thoughts and experiences as a woman working in Canadian theater today.
Thanks. Yeah, I think the thing that has really struck me as this all has come to light is that every woman that I know, and men as well, at any stage in their career, have a story. They have a story like this. They have multiple stories like this, myself included. And it's, you know, at different levels of trauma and upset. But it's very scary to think that so many people have gone through moments in their career that they feel that they had no agency over and they had no control over and had nothing to do with their work as an artist or their artistry. That's something that has really stuck with me and really upset me in all of this, is that it's so prevalent, and it's sort of a rite of passage in a really frustrating and anger-inducing way.
And I guess to maybe end this, the sort of the final segment of this conversation is, where do we want to see things going? The one thing I'm finding a bit encouraging about this conversation regarding this particular man in a position of power compared to the last time we went through conversations like this in Canada when Gian Gomeshi and that scandal hit was people aren't rushing to the defense of Albert Schultz in the same way that I saw them rushing to the defense of Gian Gomeshi. And I found it also interesting that these four women decided to make this a civil case rather than a criminal case, because I think that was an example of how our justice system fails us as women when we are trying to find justice for the things that have been done to us, because it turns into this he said, she said thing, and that was very demoralizing as a woman when that court case and how that unraveled, because it was just sort of all of us being re-traumatized all over again as we were watching that unravel. So thoughts about hopes about things like the Me Too movement and other things that are happening. Where do we hope that this is going to go in a positive way?
I wanted to jump just quickly. In some ways, I'm hopeful, certainly because of the Me Too movement and tonight the Golden Globes and such. But as Stephanie was just saying, it's almost a rite of passage of sorts. What concerns me, my daughter was recently in a drama class at a high school here in Hamilton, and this kind of behavior was somehow condoned by the teacher amongst the students, and to some degree, she played a part in it as well. And at one point, my daughter was propositioned that if she were to, you know, give favors of a sort, there might be some payment coming up because, you know, this particular person had some connections, he claimed, et cetera, et cetera. So while I'm hopeful in many ways, and Kelly and I were talking about this earlier, there is a younger generation that is now just not accepting this. As Sharon said earlier, we often just looked at it and went, well, that's the way it is. I don't know how do I avoid it.
And it's not just the theater industry. I worked in television broadcasting mm-hmm. for many years for
right.
organizations where it was well known who the predators in the room were, and they had the power. And that the expectation was if you were a woman and wanted to be an on-air talent, that you had to sleep with those predators to get your job. Like, and it was known. And it was just sort of like, well, that's the way it is.
And to the degree that they were considered inappropriate or found guilty of some poor behavior or misjudgment, they were often promoted and moved and transferred. It's not like we got rid of these folks. You know, it was like, oh, well, you've been the manager now, you're going to be the director in another station because obviously things got out of hand here. So in some ways, I'm encouraged that there are women speaking out. I'm really encouraged that there's a wide range of ages speaking about this. Mm-hmm. And certainly the worst of my experiences happened so many years ago, and I haven't put myself in a position for years where I would have to cope with any of this. But I'm concerned that social media and some of the ways that we continue to sexualize young women and the ways in which we continue to create fame from really inappropriate behavior, that this movement is going to be challenged by even young women who are willing to be out there and say, well, if this is what it takes, I'm going to just go for it. Because that 15 minutes of fame, and that concerns me, that we've created a societal norm that you do what you have to make it. So I'm hopeful, or perhaps I wish in many ways, that this conversation helps people to reconsider the ways in which we talk about ourselves, talk about women, our bodies, and what we're willing to quote-unquote sell for art, and what we're willing to put up with, and to create the stories that we want to tell, and who says it has to be done nude, and you know, does the Greek chorus really wear polyester slips? Just wondering. They have polyester in Greece, not so much.
How about for you, Stephanie? And Stephanie Hope Lawler, where do you hope things will go?
I think if there is anything, or at least one of the few good things to come of a situation like this, it's that these four incredible women have made it a little bit easier for women to speak up. They've made it a little bit easier for me, for other women, for other artists to have a safer work environment. The paradigm has started to shift in thinking about this. So I hope that the landscape changes and starts to shift, and we start to become a little bit more aware of our behavior in the rehearsal hall and outside the rehearsal hall, and how we can start to treat each other with a little bit more compassion, empathy, integrity, and really listen to each other. Really listen. And, and really be patient. Be patient with each other and move forward with a sense of integrity.
And Kelly, I'd like to give you a chance to have a final thought here. And also, you're a mom, too.
Yes.
So what are you hoping for your children, who I'm guessing might have caught a little bit of mom's theater bug, too?
Well, you know, I have a 12-year-old daughter, and I think of her in these situations. And I think I am hopeful, because this is a conversation that has come up in our home, so that we can start talking about that kind of power dynamic and how, I mean, it's known in our house that, you know, that women can do anything, and don't tell me that there's not going to be a power dynamic imposed upon us. If it is, you'll resist against it. That's just how we talk in our house. And
go, mom, go.
Yeah. but also, I have to. It was unfortunately inevitable that this was going to happen in our community. Like it was. I mean, it's happened in other cities across Canada, and it will unfortunately also still continue to happen. But I think what I'm hopeful about is how quickly people responded to it. The reaction to it has been so supportive that that it actually was, someone kind of like, Albert is a big deal. And so it's not like it was a small player. It was a big mm-hmm. player. And mm-hmm. I think it sends out a really strong message that, you know what, don't mess around. We're not tolerating this anymore. And that generationally, hopefully, yes, our next generation of artists and people, just people, right, go, this is not acceptable. And we know how to behave better.
Mm-hmm. Well, Catherine, Kelly, and Stephanie, thank you for being a part of this conversation and for joining us this evening. I really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And this was a very thoughtful discussion. So I appreciate you all being a part of it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Lila. Thanks, Lila. And just to young women out there, I think Kelly really spoke to that earlier. But and also my daughter, I think there's ways that they're managing this. And the time's up, the Me Too. But young women really have a powerful voice, and hopefully they'll be using it at every step prior to it becoming a 13-year toxic environment. Perhaps all it has to be is, that first time where they go, yeah, that's inappropriate. move along.
And maybe another time we talking about youth and school and that culture. We were talking about that idea that I'm going to break you, that you know, and it kind of starts this very beginning, that this culture where we put ourselves in these very vulnerable places, and this power imbalance that happens between artist, director, visionary, and how we're
coaches
kind of,
and athletes,
a lot of different ways. And I think we need to rethink that teacher student dynamic, director actor dynamic. Does it have to be that way because you were working in a feminist collaborative environment? It doesn't have to be this very patriarchal sense of what does power look like and how does a visionary make their vision come together. There is a different way of being creatives and coming together.
There really is. Mm-hmm. When you can also make money at that different way, I would really like to know about it.
Well, the capitalism discussion is for next week. So thank you, everyone, for calling in and being a part of the discussion. Have a great rest of your evening. You are listening to 101.5 The Hawk. I'm your host, Lila McLosh, and this is Center Stage. You're going to catch me again next week from 6 to 7 here on The Hawk. Have a great rest of your evening. Try to keep warm out there. The rain is coming soon. Take care.
From the National Newsroom of the Canadian Press, I'm Lori Paris.